I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Screen Therapy.
Because they got wrapped up in themselves or their work or LA or the arms of a girlfriend who didn't like you or who felt threatened by you. You don't remember because they all were together like a cartoon ghost.
While social anxiety presents itself differently in each person living with it, the common thread is experiencing extreme stress and fear in social situations. Kiri Oliver is the vocalist and guitarist of Brooklyn melodic punk band Early Riser. She says she finds it incredibly difficult to connect with people and to attend social events. Punk rock provides a safe space for many people dealing with mental health issues. Kiri says the safety comes when she is playing music with her friends, watching a band, or having a purpose in the scene, like putting on shows. The socializing in between, at shows and in life, are the tough parts, but Kiri has learned to set boundaries for herself. With help from her counselor, she has found freedom in giving herself permission to tell herself it's okay to not do something, to take a break from social situations and take care of herself.
My name is Kiri Oliver. I play in a band called Early Riser from Brooklyn, New York. We've been around for about 10 years. I sing and play acoustic guitar. I experience social anxiety, and that is something that I sing a lot about in my music. And I think there's a lot there for me in terms of why I gravitate towards the punk scene and how I feel comfortable there compared to a lot of other places in the world. I still experience social discomfort, but it's a lot less just because of, I don't know, the way the scene is set up and the acceptance, and that most of the other people I know in the scene also have some kind of mental health issues. I'd say pretty much every single person that I know in punk and have played with either experiences anxiety, depression, or other things. So it's a safe place to be a little awkward, be a little uncomfortable, be yourself. And we're all there for the same reason, because we love the music and we want to express ourselves, or we want to relate to other musicians who are expressing themselves or like play a role in our scene. And that is really a wonderful thing.
So do you remember when you first discovered the punk scene? And you mentioned what it appeals to you now. A lot of folks talk about the first show they went to, or when they realized, hey, wait a second, this is a place where I can fit in and feel comfortable.
Yeah, for me, I think it was a little later in my teens than a lot of people, but I was 18 when I went to my first show. I was a senior in high school. I went to see Real Big Fish.
Everybody's doing the fish. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Better.
Everybody's doing the fish. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody's doing the fish. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody's doing the fish. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I went to a really small private school. We didn't have a group of punk kids or emo kids or anything. So I think I just found out about bands from the internet. I was into, you know, Newfound Glory and Less Than Jake and a couple bigger bands like that. But because I was about to go to college, I was able to connect with other people who are going to my college who were into the punk scene. So that summer, I started meeting up with those kids who went to Warped Tour. We started going to shows. And as soon as I got to college, it was in Connecticut, I made friends with all the punk kids, including people with cars. So we would drive and go to shows in Connecticut, New England, Rhode Island, New Jersey. And I just suddenly got to throw myself in and start going to punk shows, ska shows, hardcore shows, emo shows. And I discovered like hundreds of bands that I loved. And it just opened up my whole world.
I think a lot of people think about punk rock as being this almost exclusionary, scary, you know, we'd never want to walk through the doors of a punk show, but there are certain kind of person that loves it, and they know right away that they fit. People like you and I that actually are appealed to that.
I got into the music first, so I didn't really seen punks or been to a show or anything. So I connected with music, then I wanted to go to shows. But I did have that experience when I was in Connecticut. You know, the local punk scene had a lot of really tough looking guys, like street punk guys, and they had like mohawks or they had the vest or whatever, but they were so nice. And I was just some kind of probably posery seeming college girl, you know, in this town. And they were nice to me. And one of them introduced me to a guitarist that I formed my first band with, because I didn't really want to be a part of the campus music scene. I wanted to be part of the local DIY scene. He was like a high school kid in town, this like super tough looking punk kid. And he was so kind. And that's how punks are, you know. The way a lot of punks look doesn't represent how they act to people, because there's such a sense of kindness and community.
Do you have a sense of when you were younger and getting into punk rock, the social anxiety and how it affected your life? And if so, is there a way that you can track how that maybe switched or shifted when you got into punk?
It's interesting, because when I was younger, I didn't like know the term social anxiety or anything. But when I look back, like I was just nervous all the time, you know, with people and in school. I didn't have a lot of friends. I had a lot of acquaintances. I got along with people and I would always have like one or two really close friends. But there would be times that I think of this trip. My choir went on a trip to Italy and my two best friends were not in the choir. So I was in another country for like a week with a lot of people from my school that I wasn't super good friends with. I wasn't in any of their cliques. And it's just, I just remember that feeling. Like I was so excited to be there. I was excited to do the concerts and sing and sightsee and stuff. But I can just remember being in high school and like how much of the time I just felt so on edge being around other people. I started going to a lot of shows alone, especially when I was back home in New York. And that would be very scary. This was before smartphones. I didn't have anything to distract myself. And I would just be like standing there waiting for the band to start. Because when the band started, I was safe. But when the band wasn't playing, I was just like, I'm alone. I'm so self-conscious. I don't know anyone. I don't know how people are perceiving me. I don't know how to talk to people. So that was scary. But the fact that I knew the band was going to start playing and like I belonged and I had a reason to be there, that like made it worth going. And then when it switched for me was when I like found a purpose. When I started a band or when I started reviewing shows for a local website or reviewing local bands, and then I started booking shows. That is what really helped me, because I need a purpose. Like if I'm just somewhere at a social event and I don't have a purpose, that is very, very stressful. Like I am not really going to be able to be relaxed. I'm going to be on edge the whole time. But if I have a purpose, if it's my show that I'm playing or my show that I booked, then that's great, because I'm there for a reason and I have a job to do and I'm interacting with people in that capacity as this person who's playing or booking or whatever. And that really helped me.
I was going to say the exact same thing, going to shows and going to parties. If I'm in a more elevated mood, because I live with bipolar, so I have low and high moods sometimes to the extreme. But if I'm in a slightly elevated mood, I can go around, talk to all the people in the room and be gregarious and charming even. But if I'm feeling low or even too high, I just need to have that, like, what's going to happen now? A band's going to play. Everything's going to be okay. I can enjoy them. The music stops. Yeah. I'm like, oh no, now I'm feeling self-conscious again. And
totally. Yeah. Just like that.
What are the symptoms of what you deal with, the social anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different for everyone. I know for some people with social anxiety, they have like an intense fear of going to things, but then like if they can get over that fear and be there, then it's okay. For me, it's like the fear is because of my experience being so uncomfortable and being in some ways like bullied or treated badly in school, having trouble connecting with people and not knowing what to say. Like it's not an irrational fear. It's not just like, oh, if I go, I'm going to be the life of the party and everything's actually going to be great. It's like, if I go, I know I'm probably going to be uncomfortable. And it's hard to imagine what it's like not to have it, because it's just always been part of my life. Just that nervousness and feeling like I kind of have to put on like a little smile to look like I'm okay. But inside, I'm just like, ah, you know, that feeling in my stomach. I used to experience a lot of like gastrointestinal stuff that I think was really connected to anxiety. And that hyper awareness of, am I saying things right? Did I say the wrong thing? Now I'm going to obsess that I said the wrong thing and this person doesn't like me. Like, how do I connect with people? Just struggling to feel like a part of anything, even if I am part of a scene and I'm friendly with different people, I still, in my head, I feel like I'm on the outside, which may not be how other people see it. But I'm like, oh, everyone else is cool and popular. Everyone else is friends. And I'm just kind of hovering around trying not to say anything too weird.
I've got family members who deal with social anxiety and being diagnosed and really looking at how to treat that and how to manage it. And one of the things that they say to me often is that they always feel like they said the wrong thing, like you mentioned, but they always feel like people are out to get them. So they're actually, and they have never had any friends because they're so scared of being in a relationship where they may get hurt or the person may kind of behind their back or something. And that can be really difficult.
Yeah, that sounds really, really hard. It definitely is different how it manifests for different people. There's some overlaps and then some differences. For me, it's like when there are people that I get close to, that's my safety. So if I'm at a show with my band or with a friend, then I'm just going to basically talk to them. Some people may judge me as standoffish or snobbish or whatever, but it's really just that that's my safety in that environment. That if I'm flitting around and talking to people, like that's draining. And every interaction is an opportunity to feel like I messed up. The more nervous I may be in an environment, the more likely I am to cling to my safe people. So that's why it is so great to be in a band and be able to develop closeness that way. It is hard to make friends. Like I have a lot of acquaintances in the scene, but it's very rare that I would meet someone from shows and start hanging out. Being in a band is the thing that always made sense for me as how to make friends, because you're practicing regularly and you're doing something together and you're creating something together. You're practicing, you're recording, you're playing these shows. Like that to me is just like the ultimate way to be friends with people, because otherwise I never really understood. I still don't really understand. Like I still sometimes want to make new friends and it's just very, very hard. You know, even if you say like, let's go for coffee, like it's just very hard to build something for me if I'm not creating something with people. So most of my close relationships are people that I've worked with on creative things, whether that's music, booking, comedy.
And I find it really interesting that a lot of people can just hit the stage and just be super comfortable, but then not be able to find that in the in-betweens and in the social situations.
Yeah, I mean, I love performing. I love performing since I was a kid. I always took piano lessons and did school plays and dance recitals and stuff. I love being on stage, and especially when there is like an actual stage and there's lights and you're not looking in the eyes of the people in the audience, then it's just very freeing because you just get to perform and you get this immense privilege of people who are willing to watch you just express yourself on stage. I love that feeling. I think the shows that are more stressful are the ones that are like super DIY living room type things. And I'm looking in the eyes of everyone. So that's when it stops feeling like a show and starts feeling more like a social experience of like, oh, I'm actually communicating directly to these people that I don't know. And then sometimes I get really nervous and I have a harder time performing. And I really, really admire musicians who can do the solo acoustic thing. But I think the ones who are really good at it, I know they practice their banter. And you had Derek Zanetti on. He's my friend. And he told me that when he started doing big tours, he was, you know, opening for Frank Turner and all these folks, that he got the advice to script his banter. And he's very, very good when he plays live solo. Very, very confident. But I also know that he practices and scripts what he's going to say. And I think that's brilliant because it just shows that you can work at it. And when you see someone who's doing that really well, like they probably did practice. It's not like everyone else has this amazing social ability to just like riff and make stuff up. Some people do, but a lot of us do have to practice and kind of be able to present our musician persona on stage and not just rely on those skills that you would use when you're just standing in a group of people at a party and like riffing and saying funny things.
If you were to explain social anxiety to someone and not just lowercase anxiety, I call it lowercase a, it can be really normalized, but trying to explain to someone what social anxiety actually is, how it looks, how it manifests, how it affects your day to day.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would just describe it in terms of my own experience rather than, you know, like a list of criteria or whatever. I would say like if someone doesn't experience social anxiety, then to picture what it's like to be me is that, like, you're never really comfortable when you're interacting with other people, unless they're people that you're really close to. So, like, partner, close friends, close family members. But besides that, pretty much anything feels like a social situation to me. Like, if I go to a cafe and I'm interacting with the barista, like, that's a social situation. And that is draining for me, and that's stressful. And there may be times that I decide not to go to the cafe because I don't feel like interacting with the barista, because that, for me, takes something out of me. And I know for most people, that's nothing. And I think it's kind of beyond the introvert-extrovert thing. Like, there's some of that. I'm also an introvert, where, like, social interactions drain me, but it's not just that. It's like that stress of, like, oh, was I weird? What, like, worrying what the barista thinks of me. And that's just how it can feel in any interaction. So there's a lot of bigger social events that I can't really handle and have actually stopped going to, like weddings. Like, I have a really, really hard time at weddings, and I've missed a lot of good friends' weddings. And at first I didn't really know how to explain that. And I feel like I had reasons for some of them. Like, I wouldn't know anyone else there. Like, we didn't have any mutual friends. I literally wouldn't have known anyone there. But now I can just understand and explain to them, like, this is a really, really stressful situation for me. And I have to leave early, and it makes it not fun for other people when I'm clearly not having a good time. Like, I love you. Let's celebrate another time. Let me take you out to dinner. So, like, that is kind of how it affects my life. Like, it's really hard for me sometimes to even show up for important things in my friends' lives just because of how uncomfortable it will be for me.
For someone who's in a relationship with you, you mentioned good friends, partners, what can they do to help you with making you feel comfortable and understanding what you're going through?
Some of the things they can do, or that they do are, you know, understanding that I may be uncomfortable in a situation and that I might cling to them a little bit or sort of rely on them to help facilitate conversations with people. I might disappear. I might need to just go out to the car or to the bathroom or outside or whatever and take a walk around the block. I might hit a limit where I need to leave early. So things like that. And then just understanding that there are certain situations that I might just want to avoid. Like, in my life, I've been in so many situations, so many parties, so many birthday parties at bars, because I don't drink either. So that's another thing where I'm not able to just lower my inhibitions through drinking. I've been in so many situations where I was just uncomfortable. And I finally hit a point where, you know, I started seeing a counselor and saying, like, I feel so bad that I experienced this. Like, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. Like, what do I need to change about myself so that I can be comfortable in situations that I'm not comfortable in? And she was just so compassionate. And she was like, some of the situations you're describing, like a trip with a lot of people you don't know, that sounds really hard. She said, I wouldn't enjoy that either. Like, have you ever thought about that you don't have to do that? And that was really life-changing for me, because I just got used to the idea that people would just keep telling me, like, your experience is wrong. You have to, like, reframe your brain to experience it differently, or you have to be a different person to show up for these things. And being told, like, you can have permission to not do something if you know that it's not going to be a good fit for you and you're not going to enjoy that. And that's not the way that you like to interact with people. If you're really a one-on-one person and you're not a seven people in a beach house person, like, that's actually okay. You don't have to go to the beach house. That was, like, actually really life-changing for me.
Yeah, I can relate to that for sure. Just trusting that feeling in your gut that it's not going to be the best situation for you. And I think a lot of people cave to those requests for social functions or having to do this or do that. So it's great to hear that you're recognizing that. And sounds like you got a really good counselor.
Yeah, that was really helpful. And, like, having a partner who's really understanding, and it's not going to be fun for him either if it's, like, you know, his friends and I'm not having fun. So we were really able to come to the understanding that if he has something with his friends that wouldn't be fun for me, I don't have to go. And I can really make those decisions on a one-on-one basis. Recently, there was a time when he was going out for dinner with some coworkers and friends, and he said, do you want to go? And I thought about it and I said, you know, I do want to go. I think that will be fun. And I went and I actually had a nice time. So it's freeing to be able to decide for yourself instead of always feeling in the past like I have to do these social things. They're my obligation. It's like, I don't have to do something that I don't want to do. And if I choose not to do something, then I'm going to let go of the judgment of those people who are usually people I don't know anyway. So if they judge me based on that, like, I'm not going to take that on. And if it's someone I do know, then I can explain to them that that's not the right situation for me and that I love them and would love to see them in a different capacity another time, and they're usually understanding of that. So having that flexibility is really, really helpful, so that sometimes I do end up doing something that I might not have before because I've really thought about it, and I can go into it knowing that I'll be supported. If, like we were saying before, like if it has constraints, like a dinner can be okay because it's like we're gonna go to dinner. I know how a dinner goes. It's gonna be like 2 hours max, and then we go home, as opposed to like a party, which is so open-ended.
You write a lot of songs of mental health issues and specifically dealing with social anxiety. And I'm wondering how you go into those songs.
The entire time I've been writing songs, I've been writing about social anxiety, and I didn't realize that for a long time. You know, I don't really write about romantic relationships very much. I don't write about politics really at all. When I look back over all the different bands I've been in, I really used songwriting as a way to kind of process my experience of the social world and social relationships and friendships. I remember being 18 and being like, I need to start a band so I can write about my experiences and then other people will hear them and then I won't feel so alone, you know? And then there's a certain part where I realized, like, not everyone necessarily has the same experience as me. There are certain things that I'm writing about that maybe other people don't experience, but that's okay because some people also do. Over time, I've gained awareness of the ways in which I've needed music to process that stuff. But also as I work on myself and my mental health and everything, like, I don't always need that in the same way. The music doesn't just have to be therapeutic or a way of working something out. It can be a little bit broader way of being like, here's an idea I want to play with that I think would be interesting. And it doesn't have that life or death, like, this is so hard for me and I need to process it in the song right now.
When I was diagnosed, you know, I never really knew what bipolar was until I was diagnosed. I was kind of oblivious to it. And I started to look back at a lot of my favorite bands, and they also wrote about those same kinds of symptoms or struggles that are going through. And a few of them were also diagnosed bipolar. So it's like, oh, wait a second. Obviously, I was gravitating towards these particular bands and lyrics because I was dealing with the same things. And I'm wondering if you have any bands or artists that you had kind of looked back and said, oh, wait a second, even bands that you're kind of really in tune with because of the kinds of things they're writing about.
That's really interesting. A really great question. And I love hearing that you were able to find and connect with bands that had that same experience as you. When I think about the bands that I first got into, I don't think that any of them were necessarily singing about anxiety, but I definitely gravitated towards bands that were singing about things that were bigger than just like girls. Like, I was into a lot of emo bands that just sang about girls, and I would go sing along to these songs because they were fun. They didn't like personally mean anything to me. One of the first bands I was really, really into was Thursday. And their songs are just powerful, like really capture really strong emotions, but in a sense where you can kind of make it your own of how you interpret it. And I just really connected to that, to bands that, like, they feel things that are very, very strong and very intense and are using music to process that more than just like a breakup, whatever. They're grappling with bigger things in like the world or their mental health.
Yeah, there's an episode with Jeff Rickley.
There is. I have to listen to that. I haven't. Oh my gosh. Have you read his book?
No, I haven't.
You have to read his book. Jeff Rickley's book. It's called Someone Who Isn't Me. It is an absolutely incredible book. It was so good that when I finished it, I read it again, and I have never done that before. If you're a Thursday fan or you're interested in themes of music, recovery, addiction, mental health, and just processing your life and what's happened and what you want to do with it. Like, it was such a life-changing book for me.
Yeah, we won't stop trying. We have nothing.
just keep on crawling. We have nothing left to lose. When there's so much left to do. When the wheels fall off, we will keep on smiling. When it all burns down, yeah, we won't stop trying. We have nothing left to prove. We have so much left to do.
That was my conversation with Kiri Oliver of Early Riser, earlyrisermusic.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out the newly opened store at screentherapyhq.com/store. And for even more designs, check out Scream Therapy on TeePublic. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Scream Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
Another episode of Get Lit. Today on the show, we speak with author and journalist Liz Renzetti. Hey everybody, I have tried to record this segment so many times, I keep just stumbling over my words and being confused. I don't know what's going on, man, but I'm just going to leave it. And if I make mistakes now, you'll just have to suffer through with me. I apologize. Liz Renzetti is with us today, episode 412. Air date October 10th. You may know the name from her works of fiction or from, of course, the Globe and Mail, for whom she wrote for quite some time. The book is a fantastic collection of essays, and we get right into it, and she was a great interview, and I hope you enjoy the show as much as I enjoyed making it for all y'all. Remember, you can reach me at getlitshow@gmail.com, and if you have sent something to the show, my reading pile is, as always, like 3 months thick. So I do apologize. Don't write me off. You know, keep me in mind. You can always email that aforementioned email and see how long it would take for me to get around to the book. I always try to get to everything. It does not always happen, which I think is probably fair enough. But speaking of making things happen, let's make this happen. Episode 412 with Liz Renzetti. Elizabeth joins us now. You're listening to Get Lit. This is Jamie, and we are here on the phone with the one and only Elizabeth Renzetti. You may know her work from the Globe and Mail or from her books and this new book, What She Said, Conversations About Equality. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.
Happy to have you. The book comes out officially today when we're recording this?
It actually came out last Tuesday.
Oh, it was last Tuesday.
It was one week ago, yeah.
Okay, it says right here, on sale, October 8th.
I know, they changed the pub date. I'm not sure why. I don't understand the mechanics of pub.
Me neither, but, right?
Yeah, it's been out for a week, yeah.
Well, that's cool. How's it gone so far?
It's been fantastic. I just did a really crowded event last night at Toronto Reference Library, like 300 people there. So that was quite amazing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Let me take us back to, since you're on the show for the first time, I always ask the same question. For you, a journalist, this might have a slightly different answer. And the question is, what led you down this questionable road to becoming a writer?
Ha, I know. If I'd known then where it would lead when I ever have started. You know, I always wrote stories in grade six. I wrote a play about the love triangle between